Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, called The Characteristics of King Puranjana. And this is text number 27.
Kahete
nupathayeta
Ekadasha mahabhata
Etavalalana
shubhru
Purasara
Ke
Hu
Ete
All these.
Anupatha
Followers
Ye
Dehu
Te
Your
Ekadasha
11
Mahabhata,
very powerful bodyguards.
Eta,
all of these.
Va,
also.
Lalana,
women.
Subhru,
O beautiful eyed one.
Kaha,
who?
Ayam,
this.
Te,
your.
Ahi,
the snake.
Pura,
in front.
Sara,
going.
Translation
and Burpa by His Divine Grace, A.C.
Bhaktivedanta
Swami Prabhupada.
Jai.
My dear lotus eyed, who are those 11 strong bodyguards with you? And who are those 10 specific servants? Who are those women following the 10 servants? And who is the snake that is preceding you? Please repeat.
My dear lotus eyed,
who are those 11 strong bodyguards with you?
And who are those 10 specific servants?
Who are those women following the 10 servants?
And who is the snake that is preceding you?
Purport. The 10 strong servants of the mind are the 5 working senses and the 5 knowledge-gathering senses. All these 10 senses work under the aegis of the mind. The mind and the 10 senses combine to become 11 strong bodyguards. The hundreds of women under the jurisdiction of the senses are addressed here as lalana. The mind works under the intelligence, and under the mind are the 10 senses, and under the 10 senses are innumerable desires to be fulfilled. All these, however, depend on the vital life force, which is here represented by the snake. As long as the vital life force is there, the mind works, and under the mind, the senses work, and the senses give rise to so many material desires. Actually, the living entity, known as Puranjana, is embarrassed by so much paraphernalia. All this paraphernalia simply constitutes different sources of anxiety, but one who is surrendered unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who leaves all business to him, is freed from such anxieties. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj advises a person who has taken to the materialistic way of life, which is never permanent but always temporary, to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and leave aside all his so-called responsibilities in order to get free from all anxieties.
Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnana Anjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Meditam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam.
Prabhupada here is mentioning how the living entity here represented by Puranjana is embarrassed by the material body and everything that accompanies the body, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and all the hundreds of desires that we experience every minute. And if we think about it, if we look at our own situation, then we find that it is quite an embarrassing situation we are in. Everything about this body is incredibly embarrassing. The body, of course, is described as a city of 9 gates. It has 9 holes, this body. And if you think of these different holes, then nothing that emerges from the body is pleasing.
And everything that comes from the body is very embarrassing. Right? From the mouth comes saliva. Right? And we find that, of course, very embarrassing. As long as it's inside, it's okay. But the minute it starts drooling out, then very embarrassing. Right? Clean yourself up. And similarly, from the ears, all kinds of things show up. And from the nose, other things come. And from the genitals, other things come. And from the anus, worse things come. And all kinds of things. And everything comes, everything that oozes from this body, right, from the holes of this body, are all very very ugly and embarrassing to us. Nothing. As long as everything is within the confines of this thin layer known as skin, right, everything is blocked up in there, then we can maintain some semblance of pride with the body. And the minute something is broken through, right, that boundary, even if it's a cut, for example, and blood is coming, then we become very disturbed. What to speak of that, even things that are normally exposed, like hair and nails and so forth, as long as they're there and part of the system, they're okay. But the minute they're cut off, or they fall off, or they come off, then again they become very unpleasant. So here the spirit soul is described as brilliant as thousands of suns. Enough power to illuminate practically the whole creation. Right? So much potency is there. It's just a spark of Krishna's splendor, and yet so powerful in its nature. Brahma's consciousness, for example, pervades this entire universe. Right? He's the same jiva we are, the same, you know, size, same nature. And yet, because his consciousness is further expanded, right, just like our consciousness pervades this material body, his consciousness pervades this entire universe. And this is how he's able to be conscious of everything that's going around in this universe. He can keep track of everything. Because he knows it. His intelligence is practically endless. Right? It's ever expanding. It's only bounded by the boundaries of this universe. Whereas our intelligence is more limited. Just like Hriday Chaitanya Prabhu, for example. His intelligence extends all around Radhadesh. Right? This is how he's able to keep track of what's going on. He knows, okay, someone's working there, and someone's doing this, and I need to be there at this time, and someone needs this. And his intelligence is spread throughout this area known as Radhadesh. Right? So our intelligence can be spread to a certain distance. Like for someone, it may be just their home. For someone, it just may be their body. Someone, it's their entire country, for example. In the same way, Brahma's intelligence expands throughout the entire universe. Right? This is how vast he is. And that's all the potency of the spirit soul. Right? The entire universe, which is practically unlimited in nature, is so big, but yet a tiny spiritual spark is able to be conscious of it and to control it. So the spirit soul is so powerful, so great in its qualities. And yet, it's forced to be stuffed into this little cage, right, which is called the material body. And we can imagine what an embarrassing situation that is for the spirit soul. It's, you know, sometimes stuffed into the body of a cockroach and sometimes into that of a pig or a cow or a dog or any creature. And our situation, frankly, is a little bit better, but not too much. Right? From the spirit soul's perspective, it's still pretty bad. Right? Because here he is full of knowledge, full of bliss, eternal, and stuck in a situation which is decidedly not eternal, not full of knowledge, and not very blissful. And so it's embarrassing. Right? And of course that embarrassment comes along with so many anxieties, Prabhupada is saying here. The embarrassment, the anxieties are a product of this unnatural situation for the soul. Anxieties of all varieties. Just recently I was reading that 1 out of 4 Americans has a diagnosable mental disorder. 1 out of 4. 25% of the country. And the website, this is the National Institute of Health, National Institute of Mental Health, so it's reliable statistics. And they made a point, just because I think the fact was kind of embarrassing, they made a point to say that figures are pretty much the same around the world. Right? And it's probably true. If you look up figures for Belgium or France or Germany or someplace, it's probably very, very similar in nature. One out of four have diagnosable mental disorder. Not everyone gets diagnosed, of course. I forget what percentage of that, but a very large percentage of that are anxiety disorders. And the fastest growing market for antidepressants today, you know where? The fastest growing market. Among which age group? Preschoolers. Right, preschoolers. You can look this up. Pill-popping preschoolers. Right? And preschool-age children are the fastest growing market for antidepressants. Right? Think of that. Think of the anxiety that must be present in their lives. Because if there's one group of people who we always thought were free of anxiety, it was always children. Right? Even in horrible situations, war-torn areas and so forth, you could always find pictures of children who were happily playing in the rubble because they didn't care. It didn't matter to them. Those worries were not theirs. And it was the job of others to protect them. And yet, even children now are faced with incredible anxiety. Right? So what situation have we found ourselves in? What situation has the spirit soul found itself in? The fact of the matter is that these statistics are very shocking to us, of course, but everyone in this material world is crazy. Right? We're all crazy to some degree or another. It's just a question of degree, that's it. Some people 50%, some people 60%, some people 70%. And yet, we all think that I'm the only sane one around. Right? That everyone is crazy, but the whole world is crazy, except you and me. And I'm not even so sure about you. That's kind of our approach. Right? This is kind of our approach. We think this subtly. Right? We think this inside, even though if we don't make it clear in our dealings with others. Right? That the only person who's reasonable and logical and can see things as they are is, of course, me. Right? Everyone else has some problem, some anartha, some situation they're dealing with, some history or background that's very tough, and so they've got some insecurities and so forth. We can explain everyone's behavior in terms of their craziness. But ours is, of course, sane. We're the only people above the storm. But that's not true. Right? We kind of have to admit the fact that we're all crazy in some way, right? And to some degree or another. And some of us are better at hiding it, some of us are not so good at hiding it. But the point is, we all have the potential for a cure. That we can all get better. Human life is so much, so often, it's a search for balance. Looking for the right balance between all the things that demand or command our attention and cause us anxiety. Some things are demands of the body. Some things are demands of the mind. Some things are demands of the heart or even the soul. Right? And this balance, one can think of it in terms of trying to find the balance between the head, the heart, and the hands. Right? These three things, okay. The head asks us, what do I need to do? Right? What is it that I need to do? And so we make different lists and we organize, we plan things. And this helps us to relieve our anxiety a bit. And the heart asks a deeper question. Right? Not what is it I have to do, but why do I have to do it? Right? What's the motivation? What's the purpose? What's the priority? And the hands ask, how do I do it? Right? What do I need to do? So these three questions in human existence, why, what, and how, very often we find ourselves in stressful situations, in difficult situations, because we end up focusing all our energies and our attention at a lower level of our existence. Right? We may be overworked, for example. We have too much on our plate. And we say things are getting out of hand, right? And it's too much. We can't keep up with it. And so this causes stress. So sometimes sitting down and moving from the level of the hands to the level of the head helps. You sit down, you make some lists, you know, to-do things, and you organize, you make a plan of action, and you kind of decide what to do next and so forth. And you manage your time and you feel a little relief. Okay, there's a lot to do, but I can get through it. I've got a plan. So moving from the level of this physical work body to the level of the intelligence, to the level of the buddhi, it helps. It gives us some relief. Because the intelligence is higher, Prabhupada is saying, than the senses. Right? So if all our time and energy is invested simply in the senses, that will very quickly become a cause for anxiety. So we move up to the level of the mind and the intelligence, and we feel some relief. Okay, I figured things out. I've got a control on things, on life. I know what to do. I've got things planned. But of course, that too can cause anxiety. If our plans are too elaborate, our plans don't work out, we don't know quite what's going on, perhaps we have ambitions that are causing us stress or anxiety, or perhaps it's because we feel that we're inadequate, we're less than others, that's causing us anxiety, or perhaps we have a desire to impress others, which is causing anxiety. Whatever it might be, right? Often that stress or anxiety is up here in the intelligence. Because the buddhi, the mind, they're also material. And so they're also embarrassments for the soul. They're also causes for anxiety for the soul. And so then what we have to do is move it up yet higher. Right? Move it up to the real level. The level of the heart. The level of the spirit soul. And ask ourselves, why am I doing this? I'm full of anxiety. I have tons of plans. But what's the point? Right? What are my priorities? Why am I going through this? In London on the... what is it? The M25, the really congested motorway around London, the ring, that's M25, right? It's horrible. It's just, anytime you go there, it's just jammed completely. They call it the largest car park in the world. Because you just get on and you just sit there waiting for traffic to cross. And at one point when you, if you're coming from Oxford and you're merging into the M25, not too after that, there's someone has painted this big sign on a fence, which is up on a hill, so everyone can see it as they come in. It's like, why do I do this every single day? Right? It's nice, because there are people who do this who are forced to do this every day. And it's like, why do I do this every day? Right? What's the point? All my anxiety, what's the purpose of it? Is it money? Well, okay, that's not the ultimate purpose. Well, is it family? Okay, why do I want family? Is it happiness? Right? How do I get happiness? And we ask ourselves, okay, why? What's the purpose? This is the difference between karma, jnana, and bhakti. Right? Karma, jnana, and bhakti. Bhakti gets to the question of motivation. Right? Karma is action, jnana is knowledge, bhakti is devotion, motivation. Why are we doing what we're doing? Not just what are we doing or how do I do it, but why. And until we operate from the level of bhakti, right, everything else causes stress, it causes anxiety. It will eventually. Right? No matter how well organized a person is, at some point it's going to get to them. Right? At some point material nature is going to get to them. And the plans are going to fall apart or overwhelm them. The only thing that helps save us is if we work from the platform of the soul. And that's the platform of bhakti. This is why it's so pure. Because karma is done with the body, jnana is done with the subtle body, but bhakti is a feature of the soul. Right? It's a feature of who we are, actually. It's something incredibly deep. And so we ask ourselves, okay, what is my motivation? What's the purpose of my doing it? And that in itself can give instant relief. Just asking that question and realizing, hey, actually, I've got better motivations. I've got deeper purposes in life. And in the end, what does this matter so much for that motivation, for that priority? Sometimes when I'm attending some kind of an academic conference, right? These conferences are very intense places. Right? Everyone there is operating on the level of the mind and the intelligence. And some people's minds are just brilliant and other people's not so much. And some people are just wildly intelligent and they know so much. And you start going to these places and, the major conference for professors of religion is the American Academy of Religion Conference. And this is 8,000 professors of religion from all over North America show up in one place at one time. 8,000 of them. The whole city center is basically overrun with professors of religion. And it's a situation of great anxiety, actually. Everyone's kind of running from place to place, to attend session to session, and it becomes a process of atyahara, right? Over-endeavor, over-collecting. But here it's not money they're after. It's after information and knowledge and contacts and networks and relationships and so forth. And after a while you start feeling, oh my God, I don't know anything. There are people who are far more intelligent than you are. There are people who are far more influential there than you are. There's people who know so much more than you do. And it just, I should be studying this, I should be studying that, and I should really do this also. And here's an opportunity. And the mind just goes in overdrive. You know, it just, it's going too fast, too far. And what really helps is just taking a moment out. You pull yourself away, or even if you're in the situation, you can't pull yourself, and you just stop and think, okay, hold on. Now, why am I doing all this? What's my purpose? Who am I? And why am I here in this situation? Why did I come to this conference? Okay, I'm ultimately, at heart, I'm a devotee of Krishna. Right? I'm trying to be a representative of Srila Prabhupada. This is my purpose here. Right? These are my goals. My goals are different than the goals of the average person here. My goals are not to get to the top where they are. My goals are to serve Krishna as nicely as I can, to be a representative of Prabhupada in as genuine a way as I can. Okay. So then I don't have to be like them. I don't have to compete in this dog-eat-dog world. I don't have to strive for the things that cause so much anxiety and so much stress. No. I can be who I am because I am a devotee of Krishna. Right? And immediately, oh, okay. It creates instant relief. Right? It works. If you have some kind of a presentation which is causing you stress, right, try this. Right? Just sit for a moment and say, look, why am I doing this presentation? Is it for the grade? Is it for the name and fame? Is it for, what is it? Is it just to impress? Okay, all these things may be there. But what's the real point? What do I want to be? Where do I want to be, 50 years down the road or 20 years down the road? Who do I want to be recognized by? Will the person who is imposing the stress on me be around anymore? Will this paper matter within 2 weeks' time? Will this assignment make a difference? Will that person's opinion make a difference? Once I get to my ambition, my goal, even if I get what I want, will it make a difference after that? And the answer is no, it never does. Right? You see some kind of goal, if it's an ambition that's causing anxiety, you see that goal in front of you, and you think, I have to have it, I have to get there, and we strive so hard. But the funny thing about material goals is that the minute you get there, it doesn't matter anymore. Right? It loses. Not the minute. Maybe it depends how long. Sometimes the glow lasts 15 minutes. Sometimes an hour. Sometimes even several months. Maybe even a year. You feel good. Oh, I'm now a tenured full professor. Oh, wow, that feels so good, right? Something you strive and full of anxiety. The tenure process, full of anxiety for a professor. Right? Once you get there, they're still full of anxiety. Right? Because why? There's some other goal now that you have to strive for. And something else you have to achieve. Because amongst the full professors, you're still at the bottom now, right? First you were at the bottom of the assistant professors, and you finally strove to get to the position of a full professor, and now you're at the bottom of them. So now you have to strive for something else higher. This is true in every field, of course. I'm just giving this example because this is what I'm familiar with. But no matter where, it's like hiking in the hills, right? If you go up this steep road, besides BLS, right, that road, you hike and you think, oh, okay, I'm going to get to the top. And the minute you get to the top, you realize that's not really the top. There's another, walk to get to the real top. Right? And you get there and you think, actually, there's another peak that I could get to. And so forth. This is the nature of hills, of hiking. Right? No matter how far you get, there's always something higher to get to, something more to achieve. So material nature, material energy, she's always doing this. She'll entice us. This is the carrot and the stick approach. She'll make us work hard for this goal. If I just get there, I'll be happy. Doing my undergraduate studies, getting my BA, I thought, if I get my bachelor's degree, boy, I'll be happy after that. I'll be relaxed, you know? And I can really focus on my spiritual life after that. Because, of course, studying in the university is really busy and you don't get time and so forth. It's very intense. But once I get this, I'll be educated and I'll really make a point to focus on Krishna consciousness. And, of course, you get your BA and then it's like, oh, I should get a master's too. So master's is, of course, more intense than a bachelor's degree. So you think, okay, I'll get my master's and then I can really focus on what life's really about. And you get your master's, and then of course there's the PhD still. You think, okay, once I get my PhD, then that's it. It's really it, right? There's no degree higher than a PhD. So at that point, I will have made it in the material world. I've really focused on my spiritual life. Right now things are really busy, and everyone would understand. So you get your PhD. But before you even finish your PhD, of course, there's full anxiety. Why? Because you've got to get a job. What are you going to do with your PhD? You don't want to be an unemployed PhD. That looks even worse. So you think, okay, I have to get some kind of a job. What am I going to do with my life? Right? This can happen, of course, earlier if you're not planning to get a PhD. It can happen after your bachelor's degree. What am I going to do with my life? Okay, now I have to get some kind of a job position. Once I'm settled in a job, I'm getting a steady income, I've got myself materially situated, I'm married and so forth, I can really focus on my spiritual life. And of course, this story continues, and it continues, and it continues. And you think, life could not get any busier than this. And therefore, once I get over this hump, then things will become peaceful. But of course, it always does get busier. And now people tell me when you have kids, it's going to get really bad. Right, you haven't seen nothing yet. So then, okay, once the kids grow up, then they get married, I can really focus on Krishna consciousness. But, okay, if experience teaches you anything, no. And at some point, you realize, this is never going to happen, right? I can't live my life preparing to live, right? I'm preparing for my life, which will start about 5 years down the road. No, right now is just preparation time. No, this is life, right? This is the material world. This is the situation we find ourselves in. It's an embarrassing situation. It's a situation full of anxiety. But this is where we're at. And if we don't do it now, it's never going to happen. This is, of course, Prahlad Maharaj's famous instruction. Komaram acharit pranyo. You have to begin from childhood, or now, in other words. Right? Begin soon. Begin immediately. Because that day is never going to arrive otherwise. Right? This is life. There is no life in the future. This is life. And we may have to make the present perfect. Right? The present perfect. This is a grammatical form. You were mentioning it the other day. Right? The present perfect. This is, we have to make the present perfect. We can't live in the future. We can't live in the past. The present is perfect if we just work on the present. And then the future will take care of itself. Because there's actually no future. We think, oh, there is a future. But what's the proof? You'll say, I'll prove to you that tomorrow, that there is a tomorrow. Right? But when you arrive there, it's not going to be tomorrow anymore. It's going to be the present. It's going to be now. Right? And there is no past. There's no past or future. There's only present. And we focus on Krishna consciousness, being Krishna conscious in the present. And things kind of take care of themselves in the past and in the future. This is, of course, something that takes a little realization, a little building of faith in order to do, because the tendency is so great to operate on the level of the mind and the intelligence and to saturate our lives with all kinds of plans and ideas and, you know, this and that and this and that and this and that. This is the mind's function. It's always running. It's always busy. So to be able to have the trust in Krishna that the past and the future will take care of themselves. It's not an easy thing. Right? But we can learn from experience. We can see this operating. Sometimes we'll struggle very hard for something and it's not working out, it's not working out. We're becoming full of anxiety. Right? And we realize later, oh, that anxiety was unnecessary because the situation was going to change in such a way that it would have been, it was now pointless. Right? What I was striving for is now irrelevant. because Krishna changed the situation at some point, and you realize, oh, okay, you know, I didn't need to have so much anxiety, because Krishna already had it kind of planned out. Or we're in anxiety about something in the past, right? And that anxiety is overwhelming us. And yet, a few years down the road, we realize, oh, actually, that past had some purpose to it. Right? And our anxiety is now relieved as a result. But in the meantime, before we come to that realization, for the past or the future, we end up putting ourselves in so much anxiety. So, with that development of trust in Krishna, that development of faith, Prabhupada is saying here, this is the last line of the purport. He's saying, therefore, Prahlada Maharaja advises a person who has taken to the materialistic way of life to take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and leave aside all his so-called responsibilities in order to get free from all anxieties. Right? Leave aside all our so-called responsibilities. Which is, like I said, of course, not an easy thing to do instantly. But we can come to that realization by trying to operate more and more on the level of the spirit soul rather than the level of the intelligence or the level of the body. I remember once, I'll just end with this point, Sridhar Maharaj has left this world now. I was at an initiation ceremony in Croatia at the Croatian summer camp. And this was, I don't know, maybe a year, a little bit more before he left this world. And he was already quite sick. And at this initiation ceremony, he was speaking to his disciples and to the group there also. And he said, the situation I'm in now, he said, physically, my brain, my head, my mind, my head is filled with, there's too much, I forget what he said, ammonia or some kind of gas or thing in my system. And he said, therefore, my head is always in a haze. I can't follow, like, logical, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four. And it's Krishna's mercy, he said, because he's forcing me to operate more on the level of the soul. Right? I have to realize that I'm not only different from this body, but from the intelligence as well. And I have to see things not with the intelligence now, but with the heart. From the level of the soul. And this is Krishna's blessing. This is Krishna's mercy. My Guru Maharaj is always fond of saying, right, quoting Prabhupada on this point, that we can make wonderful plans to serve Krishna, but better just to chant Hare Krishna. Right? So it's nice we make plans for Krishna because our mind needs engagement. We can't let the mind just idle. This is, until we have control over our mind, it's impossible. We need to engage. It's like a restless child. But eventually, even now, we want to take some time out just to chant Hare Krishna. Right? When we're chanting Hare Krishna, we want to try to turn off the mind and say, okay, the mind runs all day long. Right now, no. This is it. Right? No anxiety, nothing. I'm not going to let the mind spin. Just Hare Krishna. Just Hare Krishna. No making plans right now. Just Hare Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Sorry I'm a little over time. Okay, Prabhuji.
Yeah, I like what you said, the last point, but that's exactly what I was thinking. Especially, you know, in the Buddhistic mindset, they always speak about you have to be here and now. And you were speaking about the present. Wanted to mention that it's very difficult to just listen, hearing yourself chanting every time you have to catch it. Oh, now I'm listening again.
Right.
You're thinking something or you're making a plan.
Exactly.
It's very, very difficult.
The mind makes plans. It's a default mode. It's plan making. You know, so just kind of it goes back into that cycle of making a plan again. Right? Even if it's just for the next that morning or what do I have to do next? It's making a plan. Of course, we have to see our own nature also. Some people, they need to be encouraged to make plans because they don't make any plans. Like, what are you going to do? And other people are always... I'm saying like this because my mind is always in the level of the mind. You know, it's always spinning and making plans. But for others, they may be absorbed completely in the senses, right? And they need to be encouraged to make plans, right? Or someone else, whatever, you know, different people have different, some people are so much on the mind, they need to be encouraged to do something, actually, with their hands. So the point is we have to strive for a balance. That's true. We have to strive for a balance. But it always has to start from the level of the soul, right? That has to be our guiding principle. That has to be what orients us, is the question, why? What are my priorities? If we start with the level of the soul, then everything else will fall into place nicely. It's not that, oh, I'm operating on the level of the soul, Prabhu, so don't ask me to do anything. Or don't ask me to make plans. If you're making plans, you're foolish. No, it's not like that. It's not that the person who's operating on the level of the soul now switches off the mind and the intelligence and the hands and now is brainless and mindless and physically incapable. No, that's not the point. The point is, it begins from the level of the soul. That serves as the foundation. Why am I doing this? And that orients the person to then engage the mind and the intelligence of the body properly. And this is what's called purification of the mind. This is what's called purification of the body, is when they're engaged in Krishna's service, when they're oriented by the level of the soul. The problem is when we begin from the platform of the body and try to find our way, then it becomes full of anxiety. Right? So that's an important point. One shouldn't think that this is okay, then you know, I don't have to plan or I don't have to do anything. No, then we get very, you know, that's called being spaced out. That's not what we're striving for as devotees. No, devotees are right on the ball, right? Arjuna had a strategy on the battlefield. Otherwise, how could he win? Right? He's not going to go in just to whatever's going to happen. But the point is, what happened was at the beginning is he reoriented himself. Right? The point of the soul was clear. Why am I doing this? Why? Karishye vachanam tava. Because Krishna, you told me to do this. That's why I'm going to do it. Right? And beforehand, it was starting at the level of the body. Why am I doing this? Because my relatives are here. Or why am I not doing this? Because my relatives are here and I can't fight with them. Right? So you see, he was starting at the level of the body. Then he was trying to make plans and he was getting completely overwhelmed. He's saying, Samudha Cheta. My mind is spinning. And Krishna says, oh, you have to start here, right? Who are you? What's the soul? Understand that first. He gets that straight, and then, okay, now I can make plans. Right? Why? Because they're properly directed. I'm going to make a plan to serve you, Krishna. That's my desire. And then I'm going to work really hard. And I'm going to serve him with my hands. I'm going to be the best archer I can. I can actually hold the Gandiva bow now, because I'm starting from here. Okay, I feel a little bad. There's many hands up, but I want to. Okay, Mother Jai Bhadra.
I just wonder when you go to these conferences, do other professors, do you get a chance to connect with other professors on that spiritual level where after they go through a similar experience, right?
Yeah, sometimes. There are, what I realize is that there's always, in any situation you find yourself, there's always a group of people who are sincere and who are searching for Krishna, right? Who are working from that level, or at least looking for it. And sometimes, therefore, this is why we're able to preach in any circumstance, is because sometimes people think, oh, those people are completely in Maya. But in any group of people in Maya, you'll always find some who are looking for Krishna. And so this has been actually quite a process in the academic world, looking for that. And gradually, Krishna's been revealing, right? We've been able to find groups of individuals and you see where they work and how they work. And yes, they're genuinely interested in God, right? Which is quite unusual for professors of religion, honestly speaking. Okay, we should end there. I apologize to those of you who I couldn't take your questions. I have a habit of speaking too much. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.